Hey, welcome to the What's Your Jock Support Pee Wee Podcast. This is the beginning of our series on sports representations in movies, specifically high school movies, movies about high school that feature high school sports. Does that make sense? At any rate, this series is called There's No I in Teen, Playing Sports, Playing Identities. We review some of our favorite, as some of hopefully your favorite movies, where high school, sports, and growing up face off. Exploring the theme sports draws out in the movies, from more literary, I'm a professor of English, and psychological,
I'm a professor of psychology,
perspectives. And Izzy here,
I am most recently a teenager.
So why are we revisiting these classics? Well, mostly because we think it's fun. That should be enough, but we know there's got to be more. To play with academic-y theories and show how academic discourse can complicate sports in a fun and accessible form. We want to be good team players.
This week, we review a movie starring a fox about a wolf. Teen Wolf. Yeah, that's right. We're going back to your childhoods and putting a critical eye on the 1985 comedy, horror, romance, coming-of-age, and yes, sports movie. And just like our last podcast on High School Musical, the sport is basketball. Jack, how do you feel about watching the OG Teen Wolf?
Yeah, Jack, any trips down memory lane?
So this came out not that long after I was born, so I don't want to sound like I'm too old here. But of course, that means the timing is that this movie was in major play on cable television like TBS and TNT and USA Up All Night, which is a reference only some older people will get. But that means I often watch it in like 15-minute chunks from one commercial break to the next. It did come up a lot, though, in terms of things that my friends and I talked about in high school. We may or may not have gone van surfing a time or two. And even in college, we played around with this idea of something we called Cousins Night, where instead of dressing up and going out like normal individuals, we would sometimes dress up based on what we could find and 70 style or 80 styles clothing, and even give ourselves nicknames just to joke around a little bit. Nothing all that nefarious or ultimately that exciting, but I tried to dress somewhat like Styles from this movie, just with the turquoise jacket, bright yellow t-shirt, pants with a bright red belt, all that fun stuff.
You got any pictures of that? I know this is
Thankfully,
a podcast. You're just doing a great job describing it, but I think we need a holistic view with another mode of communication.
Thankfully, this was before social media, so there aren't a lot of pictures like that that exist. If there are, they're probably actually printed pictures locked away in some old box somewhere in the basement of my parents' house. Well, how do you feel, Paul?
Well, oh God, the memories. Did I just say that?
You did, and fortunately for future depositions, we're recording this.
There's a lot to unpack here for those future depositions. I'll try to keep it short, though. Rewatching this brought back some memories I never wanted to re-experience. I saw it with my mom on the VHS at our house for movie night. I was a young 11 or 12-year-old in the throes of puberty, the middle of it. I'm not sure what to say here. I was pubic. It was 1989 or 1990. I loved the movie as a kid, the transformation, the underdog under wolf story, and the, you know, heteronormative high school romance. They were all things I was really into. And I was enjoying the movie and was really feeling that sexual tension between Scott and Pamela after their first rehearsal for the play. Pamela took off her shirt and it was like this, you know, male gaze kind of thing from the shot behind revealing her back. But it was nothing that you wouldn't have seen on the cover of any celebrity magazine at the time.
Pamela, what are you doing? You are an animal.
Oh, mother. She stopped the movie because of memories. My mom thought there was going to be some kind of reveal. I got really confused, and I wasn't sure how to feel about it. I wanted to see what happened. I wanted to finish the movie, but the movie stopped, and it was kind of ruined. I remember having like an argument with my mom, asking her why it was such a big deal, and I was so embarrassed. You're not old enough, she said, and I tried to argue, well, Michael J. Fox saw everything, and my mom said he didn't. The girl put Band-Aids on her nipples, and I just was curious about what happened, so I went to like Briley's Video or the Corner Video Store, rented it, rewatched the movie. Nothing was revealed. And I think for a really long time, I thought a major source of Band-Aid revenue was for nipple coverage. And besides that, you know, every time, not like I dated a lot in high school, but whenever there were these intimate moments, I always felt surprised that there weren't Band-Aids in these intimate moments that need to be taken off. It was a very confusing time. My mom set up this tremendously confusing time about Band-Aids for me. But anyway.
Funny that was your reaction. I watched it with my dad, and when that scene came on, and some of the other suggestive scenes, like the whipped cream fight, I was like, oh God, please don't show anything. Like, I really don't want to be looking at boobs with my dad. Like, that is not our family home dynamic. So I was just like, oh my God, please cut away. Do literally anything else. I was actually very glad that she didn't turn around. And I think both my dad and I were very aware that we were not discussing this. Like, I think we were both in our minds like, let's just let this be over and we'll pretend like this didn't happen and just repress it as a group. But a response.
I just want to say, did your mom have any thoughts on it, or did you have to share anything with your mom?
Well, she didn't watch it with us, but she and I talked about it afterwards, and it did see, she was most surprised that at that time someone who was, you know, obviously so different, a teen wolf, was accepted, and not just accepted, but like became a celebrity. Basically, my theory was that that wouldn't have happened if he wasn't like their leading scorer, you know, like because he became like an advantage to them, they accepted him. But like, if he was, you know, in history and then wolfed out, like, I don't think people would have that same reaction. Even at that game, everyone was silent and looked kind of scared. But then once he started scoring, they were like, yeah.
Yeah, that was essentially it. They played that scene where everybody's very, very nervous as he's dribbling the basketball when he first wolfs out. And then he runs down and makes a shot. And everyone's like, oh, okay, this is awesome.
And wolfing out connects to the first trope we want to talk about.
A trope we like to call wolf as cheat code.
A trope, as TV Tropes defines it,
is a storytelling device or convention, a shortcut for describing situations the storyteller can reasonably assume the audience will recognize. You've probably witnessed what we call a cheat code in other movies. The first Incredibles movie deals with it at the end when Dash is trying to run a normal race without using his super speed too much at a track event.
There are a lot of other characters and stories that deal with this cheat code idea. For instance,
I think Superman kind of deals with this, like the focus on being humble and keeping the identity secret, and the Kurt Vonnegut sci-fi story Harrison Bergeron
criticizes the cheat code idea, or the idea that being exceptional is a problem.
Like, how far does one take it with something called a handicapper general, who makes sure that anyone too strong or too smart has to wear weights to limit strength as some kind of electro brain shock interruption, so thinking can't be above normal. It has to be equal with everybody else. So this is limiting the idea of the cheat code that is put to the foreground in Teen Wolf.
So here the wolf is a stand-in for the unique innate power, and the as cheat code is the ethical dilemma connected to sports and, well, gaming. It's similar to an invincibility power-up and the power loss at the end of that that makes you strong tropes. Except there's no short period of time for the power-up. In a video game, that invincibility power-up might last just a few seconds. And the power loss in this case, or in that case, is not really on purpose. It's a decision Scott makes to be human or to ignore the wolf side and the powers that come along with it. The main idea with regards to the wolf as cheat code trope is that Scott's wolf powers give him a leg up, or should we say a lichen up, on the competition in basketball, and he has agency in the decision. So instead of hiding this ability, Scott embraces it when it helps him enter a god mode on the basketball court. Previously, he is either not good or just average as a player.
As far as politics are concerned, the movie is pretty cool in presenting a complicated topic about what counts as fair in sports. A wolf or not to wolf question. Wolfing, or to turn into a wolf, can be a stand-in for some kind of unfair advantage. So we could look at it first from a fairness perspective. Like, Scott's wolfing can be compared to any athlete's talent, God-given, genetic, whatever way you want to describe the advantage of innateness of a body. So think about it like this. Scott's work ethic, a non-wolf plus ability as wolf, equals super great basketball player. Scott as a wolf is as fair as LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Diana Taurasi, and Sue Bird. Scott's wolfing is really just being similar to any of these star players with their talent.
What's funny is how wolfing really relates to how players play, kind of performing to the competition level. So James, Jokic, Taurasi, and Bird might play who they're playing to. You know, if they're playing against their typical competition, they're going to try as hard as they can. If they're playing against a group of six-year-olds, they're probably not going to block shots and storm the boards just like they would in any other situation. They could, and of course in some cases that would be absolutely breathtakingly hilarious, but in many cases they probably have to essentially put a governor on their own abilities. So like when they play just a little bit better than the competition is similar to them, that's okay. But if they slam down on some kindergartners, that's probably not okay. In a sense, even star players might be said to wolf out or push their abilities to the absolute limit every time they take advantage of those innate abilities and skills. So we might ask, is Scott really cheating when he wolfs out? It's just a part of him. And it's really a stand-in in some ways for going through puberty. Are James, Jokic, Taurasi, and Bird cheating when they use their abilities and their talents and everything that they've practiced over their careers? One thing I thought kind of sucks in the movie is the shaming of Scott to be normal, to underdog the story and deny his own wolf human identity, his new innate abilities.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like I was surprised that the moral of the story was just completely shutting down that wolf identity. I felt like he didn't really find what could be considered now maybe healthy moderation between wolf and human.
Coach, look, coach, no wolf, not now, not ever.
I'm gonna play, but I gotta be myself.
But I would also say that those athletes, they don't wolf out. I would just say that they're incredibly talented individuals. Plus, Scott goes back and forth from human to wolf, and he's only a great player as a wolf, but those athletes are amazing all the time. I mean, obviously no one is perfect every single second of every game for their entire career, but you get what I mean. They're always very skilled athletes, and I think only if they were playing kindergartners would they really take it down a notch, but that would be very on purpose. Like, I think their natural state of being is just fantastic.
And that's where things get complicated. Like, what counts as wolfing out? What counts as your innate ability? Things get even more confusing when we start to add outside help. You know, assists that can help bodies slam dunk better and longer. So what does it mean for fairness when surgeries have gotten better to extend players' longevity and greatness? What does it mean that training, at least this is my assumption, has gotten better over time? And what about equipment? Like with swimming, the Speedo laser swimsuit created with the help of NASA. Not sure what that means, but after the suit was introduced, a lot of world records went down, and it got banned by different countries. Not sure where it stands today. And when other people don't have access to these things, it really seems like the idea of fair gets complicated, like access to better coaching, just having the time to play, having location, cultural and economic conditions that make it possible, that make your success possible. I guess I wonder about how scores might be calculated differently if it wasn't just a final in a race, a game, or whatever. Where you had points. Like, what could it look like if teams got scores about advantages or something? Maybe I'm moving into handicap or general territory, but maybe a screen overlay saying something like, this person practiced this hard and for this many hours. This person gets a score for work ethic.
I definitely don't know enough about those kinds of surgeries to weigh in, but we'll speculate that having access to top coaches and training facilities is definitely an advantage. Not that it's a guarantee of success, but it certainly helps the odds. Speedos, on the other hand, seem much more accessible, so I feel like as long as everyone can wear one, that's okay. But again, I don't know much on this topic, so please correct me if I'm wrong. I will just say one sport that really stood out to me in this sense was gymnastics, because especially for women, you're kind of, your area of opportunity is pretty early on in life, and you know, to train at top facilities like that, it's quite expensive and a real commitment of time. And when you're that young, it's, you know, mostly dependent on your parents, right? Like, if you want to go to the Olympics, you know, what do you start, you know, doing homeschooling at like 12 or 13 and you're like in the gym all day? Like, that, I don't think everyone has access to that, especially so young and to be entirely dependent on your parents.
This just in, some more ways to be dependent on your parents and outside monetary resources. I had to look it up. This is how much some of those really fast swimsuits cost.
The Fastskin, this is Amazon, the Fastskin Laser Pure Intent Open Back Knee Skin is $399. The Men's Swimsuit Jammer High Waist Laser X is $349.
Wow, okay, so scratch that Speedos seem more accessible comment. I had no idea they were that pricey.
And relatedly, what about performance-enhancing drugs? Like, it's interesting to consider how such drugs might affect fairness. In the movie, Scott's dad makes a negative comment about steroids and makes it clear that steroids are bad.
You look a little tired today, Scott. I hope it's not giving the boy steroids or anything.
Not likely.
This is the same man who can also turn into a werewolf at will. So are steroids bad because they aren't part of your natural makeup, because you have to make a choice to use them? Do your goals matter? Maybe the best example ever of performance-enhancing drugs is Steve Rogers becoming Captain America. But we love that guy. He's a symbol and a hero for the United States.
Yeah, why don't we have a competition or an Olympics or whatever where it's like, people are using all of the stuff and you're like, yes, let's see how far the human body is capable of taking things. Like, fuck it, how high can a person jump? You know, like, let's just see.
So there's a classic Saturday Night Live sketch with, you know, back in the Phil Hartman era of the steroid Olympics.
First all-drug Olympics opened today in Bogota, Colombia. Athletes are allowed to take any substance whatsoever before, after, and even during the competition. So far, 115 world records have been shattered.
You know, related to that, there are, you know, in things like powerlifting, they have tested and untested divisions. And, you know, of course, tested, they're testing for drugs. Untested, they're telling you up front, we're not checking for anything, so have at it. And of course, there are some pretty big differences in terms of the size of the individuals and really how much weight they're able to move.
Will there be, you know, enhancements just in the future as we get into science fiction to jump really high? I'll get some lemur DNA in my calves or something, and then, you know, what'll happen?
That guy's got lemur calves.
I know, right? I mean, this isn't even science fiction anymore, right? Like, this stuff is close to happening. Well, I don't know how close it is, but it's
like, are lemur calves on the horizon for us all?
Another 2,000 to 3,000 years and we'll have it nailed. Just around the corner.
It's my new trope, the lemur calf. He's lemur calving right now.
That's the next outfit for cousin night.
So I guess maybe partly this comes back to whether or not someone who is making this decision is in your in-group or in your out-group. We tend to show a bias to people in our in-group. And in some cases, we take what we might think of as a poor decision or as an incorrect action, and we make that virtuous when that person's part of our in-group. So Captain America taking PEDs to try and defeat the Nazis in World War II, that's great. That's a virtuous action because he's in our in-group. Scott, when he wolfs out to win the basketball game, is treated as a hero. That's a virtuous decision because he's in our in-group. But when he wolfs out against Mick later in the movie to get into a fight, everyone around him has a pretty negative reaction because at that point they see him as a wolf, not as a beaver.
I guess for me, I'm seeing, like, it's not only that you're accepting when they're in your in-group, but you're much less accepting when they are your competition, right? Like, I am surprised there wasn't even a cutscene or a clip of the other coach being like, excuse me, you can't have a teen wolf on the field. Like, that's not okay. Or court, whatever.
Yeah, you're right. And Teen Wolf's were mentioned. And then the coach, like, the thing that he was upset about, look at those sneakers.
Thorne, look at the sneakers those guys are wearing. If our guys had sneakers like that, there's no telling what they could do.
We got to get some sneakers like that. I mean, that's why they're winning, right? So you've even got the fairness there. They never get to the wolf, just like you said, I mean, but it's the sneakers that are mentioned. The wolf has never caused for any fairness alarm.
And there's something else you noticed related to how the Teen Wolf is received.
So after the first game, I think it's the next shot or the next scene, you see it's the next day and the school paper has come out. And I was expecting it to be like, guys, what the fuck? Like, guys, Scott is a wolf? Like, what? Like, or, you know, some kind of crazy expose. But the headline was just, can he make it two in a row? Like, their whole thing was that they just wanted to keep winning. Like, yeah, that really blew my mind.
And I think it's worth clarifying your comment, Izzy, about not seeing the other coach saying something negative. The idea with this in-group, out-group bias is something that we, you know, if someone in the out-group did it, we would criticize and say that's a terrible decision, right? And in this case, if the other team also had their own team wolf, we'd be like, oh, these people are cheating. But because it's ours, we take that what might be a negative behavior in another situation and we make that virtuous because it's part of our in-group and it's benefiting us and we like those people better. But as soon as you flip that person to the out-group, that very same behavior that we thought was great instantly becomes a liability and becomes a poor decision.
Of course. And the arguments are totally different, right? Like, if he's your competition, you're like, hey, that's not fair. You have a literal teen wolf on your team. You know, we're all just high schoolers, human high schoolers. But then if you're on his team, you're like, this is who he is. Well, it's not fair to bench him just because he's phenomenal. You know, like, so it's like the mindset also totally changes based on if they're in your in or out group.
And things turn against him, right? I think maybe you could talk about the in or out group here where everyone on his team, even though they're winning, start to have some negative feelings towards Scott.
When do the rest of us get our hands on the ball? Who's being in the championship if none of us get to play?
I think part of it has to do with like being a ball wolf, I guess you'd want to call it, instead of a ball hog, taking over games. Being a good teammate is just being a bad teammate. And then how good a teammate is it when he comes back, instead of just sharing as a wolf, you know, he could learn. Wolf doesn't have to be selfish, but it could help them win. I don't know where I'm getting at, but there's something about the end where everybody all of a sudden becomes great players just because they're trying hard.
Yeah, that's definitely a trope, right? We've seen that many times. It's like, if you just believe hard enough.
If you believe hard enough, yeah, the believing trope, then you're going to win. Even though, you know, we forget the other team probably wants to win. They're believing, you know, pretty hard, and they don't have a team wolf, and they've done pretty well without the team wolf. So then there's that fairness. We still cheer for the Teen Wolf team.
Even though there's a major issue with the idea that it doesn't matter how
we win this. Look, this is the championship. Now, it doesn't matter how we got here, we're here.
I don't know about that. Seems like it could matter, right? I mean, that seems like a pretty important thing to consider.
Yeah, it seems like you also would not have gotten there literally any other way, so.
I think we can all agree that great coaching had a huge impact on getting there in the end.
And, you know, here's some of the great coaching advice we witnessed.
I look at it this way, guys, it'll all be over in less than an hour.
Let me give you a little advice. There's three rules that I live by. Never get less than 12 hours sleep. Never play cards with a guy who's got the same first name as a city. And never go near a lady who's got a tattoo of a dagger on her body. Now, you stick with that. Everything else is cream cheese.
It doesn't matter how you play the game. It's whether you win or lose. And even that doesn't make all that much difference.
Those were great. Not going to win you any games, though. But Teen Wolf helped us win a little bit in thinking about equity and equality with regards to fairness. Here are some final thoughts on fairness. Go ahead, Izzy.
I think fairness is often looked at in different ways versus, you know, can be seen as an equality or an equity way, right? Like, do we all use our natural talents and perform to the best of our ability? Right, not just natural talents, but also opportunities, right? Like the coaches, the uniforms, the super expensive Speedos and, you know, beautiful pools, whatever. Or is it that we all try and play at the same level, right? Like that argument we were talking about earlier, where if they're in your group, right, you want that, you argue that's who they are, that's why would we stifle that? But if they're not, you're like, how could any of us possibly play at that level?
Yeah, it's a great point. Like, thinking more in terms of how fairness is often looked at, you forget about the myth out there that it's fair, that you're on this playing field where it has to do with people practicing and trying hard. We know there's talent out there, that, but there's just this idea that we get this all on the playing field and then it's really on you. But we forget about all these other things that go into things being fair. You know, winning and losing, it's not so black and white. It's pretty complicated.
Make sure to keep an ear out for our third episode in our There's No I in Teen Playing Sports, Playing Identity series, where we explore
team soccer, Channing Tatum, and identity in She's the Man.
If you are a fan of Shakespeare, Twelfth Night, Amanda Bynes, Channing Tatum, and a whole lot of shenanigans, and also probably some really dated moments that didn't age super great, but still a fantastic movie overall, tune in for She's the Man.